As we mentioned before, that we said that XML and SOAP and WSDL are important technologies. The first one we will look a little bit closer is basically the SOAP, the Simple Object Access Protocol, and it allows something like an XML-based transfer of messages between the requester and the provider, and we can actually say that it's the de facto standard for XML messaging, and usually it works via HTTP, but it could also use SMTP, it could use RMI, IIOP, there's a whole bunch of possibility and options where it would work with. And it is relatively simple and also flexible and extensible, as I mentioned before, with these messages, message patterns, where I said, well, the flexibility, I could add new parameters and tag them. That's one of the advantages what you have with SOAP. And also here, it's not bound to a specific protocol. And what you usually, when you look at it, here you have the HTTP request. When you use HTTP, send it to the web server, and that passes it on to the service object. And SOAP, that basically provides something like an envelope. As it here provides an envelope to for the messages. And therefore, in that sense, it puts something like the whole header information around the whole message to be sent. And when we look at parts of SOAP, we have this envelope, and the envelope describes what's in the message. So here describes what is in the message, and also it provides information how to process it. So here, how to process it, in a sense that who is the actor, and then the actor basically has to be called. It has a set of encoding rules. And therefore, an important part of it, well, data types. What kind of data types are supported? And therefore, and these are application-defined data types, not basic data types like int or string. It's more like application-defined. And the other thing is here representing a procedure call, for example, using HTTP. And that's how it's used to transport these XML messages. And when we look at a SOAP message, here it has this three parts. The envelope, that's a very important part of it, is the namespace. And because we use tags, these tags make only sense if we know what kind of semantics or what kind of significance they have and semantics they have. Therefore, in that sense, we have generic namespaces for XML, these generic SOAP. But then we can also have these application-defined namespaces. And then we can use specific names to tag parameters, to tag information. We have an optional header, like auxiliary information, authentication, encoding of data, in a sense, data types. Intermediaries may modify the header. So here, intermediary may modify the header. And therefore here, we may also include things like routing information and so on. And modify means deletion, means inserting new things or modifying existing ones. And this, the body, is basically intended for the final recipient. And the final recipient, that is actually interacting with the SOAP body and interpreting it. And there you have the method name in it, the arguments, and so on. Because, I mean, SOAP, you can use it for regular RPC call. And therefore, in that sense, it's just another way of implementing a remote procedure call. And we will later see how like a Java method call would look like. The exchange model looks like the following, that the what we heard from RPC, we had this request response. SOAP is a one-way transmission. And therefore, in that sense, if we want to have a request response behavior, we need two SOAP messages. We need something like an outgoing SOAP message and an incoming SOAP message. And that's what we can combine to say, well, this is here a model's request response interaction model. And there is that's very different from a procedure call as we know it from RPC. RPC, we say, well, we write down the procedure call and that's it. That's basically mapped into two messages, a request message and a response message. And each message is basically fully described. And as you remember with the IDL of objects, we only describe the data types and the interface. We didn't describe any messages. There were no message description. It's the RPC environment mapped it somehow onto a TCP message. Here we describe it actually how it's mapped into an XML message. The when a SOAP message is received, then here a SOAP application. The point is here, it first of all, it tries to read all the parts of the SOAP message. Here comes in the point that only the tags are interpreted, which are understood by the application. All the tags which are not understood, then they are not really handled, and they are ignored. If it's an optional, it's no problem, because then basically optional parts are ignored. If it's an essential part, then it would return an error message and says, well, I don't understand the tag. And I don't understand that part. And therefore, in that sense here, the also the flexibility we have, the same thing as we know it from XML processing. If you have an XML parser, it parses all that XML parts which it understands. And here, this here, the soap actor, it also defines the set of roles in which the node, and this means here the SOAP application has to act on. So here defines the role of application. And the here mandatory parts, and that's I already mentioned, it verifies the mandatory parts, and the optional parts are processed. If they are wrong, then they are ignored. The point is here also, and that's also refers to the role, if this SOAP application is the ultimate destination, then it also looks at the body. I mean, if it's ultimate, this here interpret body. If it's not the ultimate destination, then it is something like an intermediary. Then it removes all the parts which are relevant for it, and then it would forward the message to the next one, and then possibly put new things into the header. Here, if it's not the ultimate, it only works with the header. And all parts identify, I mean here, all parts, sorry, in header. And it does not really work with any parts of the body, message body. The exchange pattern we already mentioned before, and now we can look at using SOAP with HTTP, and also how a request and the response message would actually look like. And the media type is text XML. If you look at a web document and you receive something from your web browser, there you always have the type, the media type in it, and here that's always type XML. And usually the SOAP maps very naturally onto HTTP semantics. Therefore, SOAP does not really override existing semantics of HTTP. It basically just maps onto HTTP semantics. And therefore, that was already considered when SOAP was developed. When we look at a message like this, here, that's the typical stuff you know. Here, the content type, the media type, and also the SOAP action. And here, that's our SOAP namespace. And it provides information about certain tags, the general tags. And here, we have the namespace of the application. So here, application specific namespace. And that application specific namespace understands now tags like symbol. And because in XML SOAP namespace, you don't have any meaning of the tag symbol. That's an application specific. And here what we have here, we have our envelope, and which basically goes around. We have here the information about the namespace and the encoding style, and here we have the body. We have no header. In that sense, I already mentioned before, the header is optional. And here immediately we have the content part. And what does the request do? It sends a message to a certain URI, and then it requests the function get lost rate price, and then here it has the parameter. That's in symbol. And how the SOAP request is then processed, well, it could be a servlet, it could be a CGI script, or it could be also a standalone Java application and running on the remote web server. And therefore here you see the host which where the interaction takes place. The response, the SOAP response, looks pretty similar. And therefore, also something what we already know, we already have here our general namespace, the encoding style, and here we have again our body. We don't have a header in between, and here we have our application-specific namespace. Then here we have the name of the message, as you hear, name of response message. And then we have the tag price, and that's basically then a quote of the stock, which is the current price. And therefore, if you compare that with an RPC call, and an RPC call had more or less, well, it would have a code for that, and it would have this. And possibly it would have success or failure information if everything worked fine. And all the rest, namespace information, envelope information, all these tags, they are not really part of the binary RPC RPC call or RPC response. And with XML, you have a significant overhead. And with our faster networks, it does not make such a big difference. With the slow networks, and if you, I don't know if some people already worked with modems where they used a phone receiver and put it on, hooked it up, and then basically the messages were transferred on the phone lines, and there we talked about 120 bits per second or 300 bits per second. Then here, if you would transfer that, that would be rather bad for that use. Good. The quickly the SOAP response here, as it looks like application object, SOAP-based middleware. Then you convert it here into XML messages, SOAP messages, and then you do the same thing on the reverse. Therefore, in that sense, from the structure, it looks pretty similar. And otherwise, it just uses here XML and SOAP-based middleware. If we use like a Java method which we want to invoke across the network. And here, add 5 means increment integer number. Also here, increment integer number by 5. That's all what our function here does. And we can look at the function, the envelope. We have here no header again. I mean, the header, as you see, is very interesting if you have intermediaries, because the intermediaries, they usually work on the header information, like authentication and routing and so on. If here we go directly from the requester to the provider, and there's no intermediary in between, then certainly we have the application namespace here. The generic SOAP namespaces I left off. They are here in the envelope. Then we have here an argument. So here, argument of type int, as we have it defined here. And in that sense here, the invocation looks like the following here. That's our method name, and here the encoding style for our that's also defined by SOAP, and here we have the argument, and that's basically all we have for making an RMI call from a method across the network. The same thing is for the result. It looks pretty similar. Here, that's the name of result structure. So here, name of result structure. We have here the application domain again. We have here the name of the SOAP encoding style. And here we have basically the result. And here the first of all, we have that's the result structure. And we can have multiple results. Therefore, we can have here that defines, and we can have component 1, component 2, component 3, similar as we have it in struct or in a record. You define here again here the data type and then the real result. The convention, what you usually have is that you take, for the result structure, you take the name of the result structure of the method and just add response. And often you make it, you even make it in a way that you take the method name. For the request, you add request. For the response, you add response. And the data, and if you have an in-out parameter, then it would also, the in-out parameter would also appear here. In a sense, the result, you would have to, you would have something like an array, and that array then provides you the first element, second element, third element, and so on. As you remember, when we talked about the data structures, and where we talked about the XML data structures, then we already had an example how an array data structure looked. And that's you can use here too. The last thing is with the intermediary, with the router, it's that's SOAP router. That is basically our intermediary. And the intermediary, certainly it takes messages, SOAP messages from an external network, performs certain operations on it. And for example, also what we can do is security policies in a sense of authentication. It can perform an operations on it. Then it possibly does some logging and also auditing when it was received and so on. And then it could be that also a router, a SOAP router, has also routing capabilities. Therefore, in that sense, it has the possibility how to decide where in the internal network the SOAP request should be propagated to. And it could be, and therefore in that sense, it might have a header information, and that header information might then transfer it, or here the SOAP router decides and say, well, according certain characteristics, it sends it to service one, or it sends it to service N, and so on. And therefore, in that sense, the router has also routing capabilities in a way that it can decide where the operation is actually moved on within the internal network. And when you have this routing protocol, that's relevant if the SOAP message is transported across multiple SOAP routers. Therefore, similar like MAC messages, you can more or less handle the document going from one SOAP router to the next one, to the next one, to the next one, until it comes to the final service. And SOAP router are actually with WS routing, that's an extension to SOAP. I think we can stop here and continue on with WSDL. What I need now